This is the Data Science Conversations podcast with Damian Deehan and Dr. Philip Diesinger. We feature cutting-edge data science and AI research from the world's leading academic minds and industry practitioners so you can expand your knowledge and grow your career. This podcast is sponsored by Data Science Talent, the data science recruitment experts. Welcome to the Data Science Conversations podcast. My name is Damian Deehan, and I'm here with my co-host, Philip Diesinger. How are you, Philip?
Good, thank you. Hi, guys.
And today we're talking to Kirk Marple about the latest developments in combining knowledge graphs with LLMs to get better results from generative AI initiatives. It's a new exciting area for us to explore. Kirk, how are you doing?
Oh, very good. Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you.
Great, and it's a pleasure to have you. So, by way of introduction, Kirk is based in Seattle and has spent the last 30 years in software development and data leadership roles. He did his computer science degree at the University of Pennsylvania and his master's at the University of British Columbia. His early career was spent working at large corporates, which included 4 years at Microsoft, and he also worked at General Motors. He then moved into the world of smaller businesses, and he successfully exited from his first startup called Radiant Grid, which was acquired by Waller Technologies. Now, as the technical founder and CEO of Graphlet, Kirk and his team are streamlining the development of vertical AI apps with their end-to-end cloud-based offering that ingests unstructured data and leverages retrieval augmented generation to improve accuracy, domain specificity, adaptability, and context understanding, all this whilst expediting development. So if we start at the top, Kirk, can you just explain knowledge graphs, what they are, and their historic role in the technology industry?
Yeah, for sure. It's really about extracting relationships between bits of knowledge. I mean, classically, we talk about people, places, and things. So that could be, a company with, where they're located, what their revenue is, number of employees, and we would call that metadata on that entity. And that company may have relationships to, Microsoft's in Seattle. So there's an edge that you create in the knowledge graph between those entities. And the knowledge graph is really just that blown up. It's all the different interactions and interrelationships between those little bits of knowledge. And the value becomes information retrieval. It's a great way to represent the knowledge in a way that you can then retrieve it and, quote, walk the graph. Kind of get from one place to the other and really be able to learn more from the knowledge that's embedded in there.
Okay, great. What sparked your interest in knowledge graphs? Can you take us back to there, please?
As you said, I'd been working in the broadcast video area for about 10 years, and we dealt a lot with the metadata for like audio tracks. We were ingesting all of the record label information. So they had like who played on an album or a song, the producers and all that. And you could think of that as essentially a knowledge graph. If you break it down where, say a producer produced multiple songs, or somebody was a session player on different songs or different albums. And so I started to think about all this metadata we were capturing and how it's all interrelated. And so I guess about 7 years ago, I started thinking about building an app for live music and the venues people were playing at and kind of all the interrelationships. So you could kind of see like who was on the common bill with somebody else and things like that. And honestly, it was a side project. And that got me started thinking about knowledge graphs and how you could apply it to different forms of data. And then it became more of a business thing after that.
Okay. And why do you think data scientists, data engineers that are working in industry should be paying attention to knowledge graphs right now in the current AI era?
People are familiar with RAG, and the R in RAG is really, retrieval or information retrieval. And it's an area we've been working in of, first you have to get the data, and then, it becomes a search problem or a filtering problem via metadata. And knowledge graphs to us really, give another axis of how can I retrieve data to feed into now large language models and large multimodal models. And so I see it as a thing that, I mean, it has been a bit of a sort of a sidecar, I mean, in very specialized parts of the industry, but now it gives you another view really on the data. And honestly, I think vector search has been sort of a big thing over the last couple of years. It's been around for a while before that, but graphs are another facet of information retrieval that that complement that as well.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because both large language models, neural networks, as well as the knowledge graph itself are fundamentally like graph-based technologies, right? So they retrieve somehow their features that we're using now from this huge complexity that comes from graphs and different nodes connecting and so on. On the topic of knowledge graphs, maybe if you stay on that side a little bit longer, could you give some examples of industry use cases for knowledge graphs across industries so that they're not so dependent on a specific sector?
Yeah, I mean, I think commonly, if you think about the sort of customer data platform kind of concept, I mean, we have customers and you have their the end users and kind of the, I mean, the different relationships there, there's a, I mean, pretty good implicit kind of graph structure to that. I mean, you have people that are working at companies, those companies exist in places. And so I think there's, I mean, a pretty common relationship that, I mean, a lot of times these are relational models, I mean, like a Salesforce data model or things like that. But there's also, you can map that, I mean, in a lot of ways to a graph structure. And so we sort of, I mean, we kind of look at knowledge graphs as almost like another index to the data. And I think there's a lot of data sets like the CRM model or things like that, that map pretty easily to a graph model as well.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense, yeah. So maybe to get to the bottom of how would a knowledge graph differ from other commonly used data structures, let's say a JSON format or something that has an intrinsic hierarchy versus a knowledge graph which does not, but has maybe potentially directional links. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you could represent knowledge graphs, but I mean, in a JSON structure, I mean, some other data structure, but I mean, they're kind of like a linked list. I mean, in that you can follow the links and kind of, or like a DAG kind of workflow. The problem is, I mean, you might get recursion. I mean, you might get sort of coming back around to the same element. Like, I worked at Microsoft. There might be another person that worked at Microsoft that, I mean, maybe Microsoft put out their company, and then that that links back to me. And so you could get cycles in that graph. And I think that's an area where, I mean, it would be hard to represent. I mean, just as a, from a serialization standpoint in a JSON structure, but you can, I mean, there's ways to work around that. I mean, you only walk the graph so far, or you collapse links together.
You already started talking about the challenges or maybe also the limitations of knowledge graphs. Are there others, other limitations that we should be aware of?
I mean, I think some is just familiarity. And I mean, there's a lot of graph database companies. I mean, Neo4j and I mean, all the ones that everybody's aware of that, I mean, I think you have to have something that can support the data structure, which I think maybe is difficult. And sort of the ETL process to get data into a graph, maybe people aren't as familiar with, but I think we have the same problem where, I mean, what we really thought about is, I mean, how do you do ETL for unstructured data? And I mean, that's, there weren't great, good tooling. And I think, I mean, there's also maybe not as good tooling for graph ETL, even though there's vendors doing it, but it's not as familiar to folks. So I think that's a limitation. And I think it's just not as common of a data structure to people. And I think it's, I mean, maybe they're familiar with the kind of typical relational model and graph just doesn't fit their kind of mindset as well.
That makes sense, yeah. You mentioned already natural language data. How do knowledge graphs contribute to data integration and maybe semantic understanding of such data sets?
Yeah, I mean, the way we look at it is, I mean, say you have a couple pages of text and you're mentioning companies, you're mentioning people, places, like I said, and you could use a vector embedding to find, I mean, a company, I mean, Adobe or Amazon or someone in that text, and it would use sort of a keyword search or even a vector embedding. And in the RAG process, I mean, you want to pull back the relevant text and then provide that to the LLM. But what if there's data about the entity that's not in the text? And that's really where knowledge graphs shine, where maybe it's the current year's revenue, or it's how many employees do they have, or things you can enrich around the entity that you can then kind of pull back from anything that you're finding via the vector embedding. So to me, it's kind of an enrichment step where I mean, you could just sort of retrieve on the graph itself, but then it's more of a global set of data. You're not probably going to get anything relevant to a specific question necessarily. Maybe the question starts with a text kind of vector search, and then you could sort of do another set of kind of context to it that pulls data in from the graph. But there may be use cases where you just want to talk to the graph itself if you have enough information in there. And when I say kind of pull from the graph, it's really the metadata around the nodes more than like the node itself, which might just be like a word.
So you mentioned already like vectorization, embedding of data and so on, which are very important techniques when it comes to LLMs. Are there any potential other benefits of integrating knowledge graphs with large language models?
I mean, the context one is the one we've been kind of working on and kind of see the big benefit of. I mean, the one that hasn't been tapped as much, and I mean, I started looking at this 5 years ago, of actually training models on graphs and having sort of a graph embedding. Because as a similarity search, I want to say, okay, I'm related to my company, I'm related to my location, and you kind of take that subgraph, sort of my personal subgraph of information, and I want to find how that's similar to a more global graph of data, and that may give me a set of data to retrieve. I mean, there definitely are models out there. I wouldn't call them, you can't just get them from like OpenAI as an API today. They're not kind of off the shelf as a service yet. And I think that's been sort of a limiting factor a bit, where the bar is still a little bit high for integration compared to how common embedding models are, that you can just get an API key and start using it in 5 minutes. So I think that to me is an area that if we continue down the path and it starts to be more accessible to application developers, I think we'll start to see more benefit.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible to go the other way around, to start with embedding or vectorization and then use that to build a knowledge graph based on it?
From clustering, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we haven't done it directly, but I mean, from building clusters based on similarity and then building that knowledge graph around that, definitely I've seen a couple projects that are kind of looking at using embeddings for that similarity clustering. And I think it's a really interesting area because you can look at the data from kind of different directions of kind of grouping things in similarity, mapping that to common, maybe doing named entity extraction on those clusters and finding kind of maybe another pattern there. And I think that there's a ton of possibility in that direction.
Makes sense. Yeah. So what kind of methods or techniques are you using to integrate knowledge graphs with large language models?
Yeah, I mean, we look at there's kind of two sides to it. There's the data ingestion path of, okay, how do you get data in? How do you extract entities and how do you store it? And we started on that first. I mean, and that's the first step of, I mean, you're pulling in data from Slack, from email, from documents, from podcasts, and you have to do named entity extraction, named entity recognition on that. And that was really where we started. And so building up a knowledge graph from the data. So we had a good data structure to pull from. And now we've kind of moved into the RAG, sort of graph RAG concept of, okay, now I can ingest all this data, I have this representation in a graph, how can I use it? And that's where we've done some experiments and done some projects with starting with vector search, figuring out, okay, I have similar text kind of chunks that I found. Those text chunks have entities that we've extracted from them. And then you could essentially use it as a way of expanding your retrieval and say, okay, these entities that were named in there, now let's go pull in some more content that also observe those same entities. And that's a way to use graphs for like expanded retrieval.
Mm-hmm.
Another I'll just mention is using graphs and faceted queries is actually a great way to get data analytics. We have actually a demo on our website of just ingest a website and use NER to build a graph, and then essentially get sort of a histogram of here's all the topics, here's all the people, the places, the companies that were mentioned in the data. And so you're kind of summarizing the graph into just a chart form. And it's actually a really easy way to kind of get a different view on what's inside your data.
I was about to ask about actually. So like just reflecting a little bit on what you said before. So my question is a little bit, how can knowledge graphs actually contribute to helping with interpretability and explainability of LLMs, which is like a big problem still, right? Is there like a way of doing that? If you or do you need to have the data structure already graph based, and then you add the LLM as another layer on top, or can you also go the other way around and just exploit the knowledge graphs to kind of understand what the LLM is actually doing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, one way is to look at if you have citations. So you have the LLM, it responds, it gives you back a list of citations of your sources that you used, and you could then visualize the citations in a graph form and say, okay, well, here's the topics. I mean, in addition to the text that it found, here's the topics and entities that were essentially cited. And you could look at, hey, I mean, do these have commonality between these citations? Are they similar? Are they different? So I think that's actually a really interesting way. I was actually planning on building a demo app that actually does that, to just from the citations do a graph search, get that data, and be able to visualize it in a demo app. And I think it's really useful that way.
If we compare knowledge graphs from a computational speed perspective to other data models, is there a significant slowdown or a different type of requirement of resources when you scale that up? Like, what's your experience there?
There's a lot of difference of, there's so many different graph database implementations. So it's hard to generalize, but I mean, I think you can, even with different graph query languages, and there's starting to be standardization around that. I think you can, what I've seen, you can make it as fast as you need. I mean, you can throw more resources at it. There's different graph database architectures that are better than others. I mean, if you look at a pure query, like we're making to the graph database versus just like a JSON document store, it's definitely slower. I mean, it's still milliseconds, but it's maybe 3x slower just to do a graph query from a simple JSON lookup, kind of SQL type query on that. But what we've done is kind of balance it where the graph is really an index. And so it's almost like a vector query, where from our vector queries, we just get IDs back. And then we just look up that data in a faster data store, like our JSON document store. And we do the same thing with the graph. So the graph itself is really more just the node and edge index, but the meat of the metadata and all the things linked to it are in a faster data store.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense, yeah. So in my professional life, I've not come across huge use cases so far of knowledge graphs. Yeah, so I remember some use cases of co-shopping, which can be represented pretty well with graphs and so on, where links represent basically a coupling between different entities. So I remember that. But I wanted to ask you, is there any, or what's the largest scale use case that you're familiar with?
There's some massive knowledge graph implementations that I've seen from like telcos and from different things like that, that they're doing kind of relationship based or cybersecurity, like money fraud. That's another area that I've seen. They're not very deep knowledge graphs. It's sort of, hey, I call you and you call them and maybe there's some money transferred and it's kind of, but there's a lot of entities. And I think that's where there's a lot of different algorithms you can write on the graphs come into play. I mean, we're almost using graphs in a different way, where we're not doing like sort of walking the graph or page rank, or we're not running algorithms on it per se. We're using it more as a sort of connective tissue for the knowledge, as a way that we can, from any point, you can pull on data. And really, it's more like an alternate index for us to represent that data.
Yeah.
The visualization point you made was important, where I think a lot of the common use cases I've seen for graphs are more visualization centric. There's a couple of great tools out there that you can dump in a lot of data and you can like walk the graph and click into them and follow the patterns. And I think I've seen a lot of use cases that are more just exploratory in a sense.
But it seems like a visualization use case would be very limited, because it's fundamentally limited in the end by the user. So as a visualization tool, like I can see that makes sense. There's lots of applications where data is visualized in that sense of a graph that you can then explore. Disease data, protein data, and so on. Yeah.
And the other thing I think is, the sort of time-based index, I mean, of a graph that kind of evolves over time. I mean, you're inserting data that was generated, say like a Slack message, and so you can sort of pivot on the graph and say, okay, well, show me the relationships in the graph over time. And I think having, I mean, that, and we've done some work with geospatial as well. And that's where I think you could start to say, oh, hey, show me the relationships within this geo boundary and between these time ranges. Gets super interesting.
So Kirk, maybe one more question on the knowledge graph as a kind of a data framework or a useful tool. If there's a data scientist, you know, sitting on a problem, what are kind of the signals that a knowledge graph could be the right tool to get ahead with it?
The thing that comes to mind is sort of the interrelationships between the data. And so, I mean, in a typical data set, I mean, maybe it's sort of, if it's row-based, I mean, maybe there's not as much interrelationships between the rows, or, I mean, we're seeing different data sets like that. And this is a way where there's kind of an implicit grouping or classification, really. And I think that's a lot where we see is, I mean, you can bucket data into sort of different classes of nodes. And one thing I didn't mention before, so we're based on schema.org and the JSON-LD kind of classification structure, the taxonomy. And that's really where there already is standardization around what is a person, what is the organization, and defining metadata. And so I think you can look at it one way where you're kind of mapping data to an existing kind of graph structure, or some people take a different approach where you're mapping it, you're kind of inventing your own data structure and your own relationships. And so I think, I mean, but to me, it's really about that kind of classification metaphor of, okay, this is a something, and you can sort of assign that, and then that becomes a relationship between other data in the graph.
So talking about the relationship intrinsically hidden in the data for a knowledge graph, what would that be? So I'm assuming there would be some sort of node, links between the nodes, maybe labels also on the links, so different type of links, and maybe directional links. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, you can, you're totally right. So you'd have typically like a node name and a node label. So that could be like a person with my name, a directional link of, say, there's like a place Seattle, which is like a place label, and Seattle's the name, and a directional link of, and you could have a basically an edge name. And so like lives in could be like the edge. And that would be where you definitely want to standardize some of that, the classification with the labels and with the edges, because you want to be like, oh, okay, where have I lived before? And maybe now I have a lives in or lived in edge to like 10 different places I've lived. And so that's a really interesting area. I mean, an important point of, you don't want your knowledge graph to be kind of random. Like, it has to have some structure to it, because you want to be able to query it on the other side of it. And that's really where some of this really plays in, because we've kind of standardized a concept of observations. Like, we're in a piece of content, we're observing an entity. Like, we recognize a place, a person, a company. And so we kind of have a bit more of an abstraction of this, hey, it's an observed entity in content. And then you can basically flip it around and say, okay, in this piece of content, show me all my observations, or what other content observed this same entity. And so once you kind of have this structure, it makes it a lot easier to query your graph with.
I would like to take a brief moment to tell you about our quarterly industry magazine called The Data Scientist, and how you can get a complimentary subscription. My co-host on the podcast, Philip Diesinger, is a regular contributor, and the magazine is packed full of features from some of the industry's leading data and AI practitioners. We have articles spanning deep technical topics from across the data science and machine learning spectrum. Plus, there's careers advice and industry case studies from many of the world's leading companies. So go to datasciencetalent.co.uk/media to get your complimentary magazine subscription. And now we head back to the conversation. Kirk, could you explain the concept of graph retrieval augmented generation, or graph RAG as it's known, and its importance?
It's something that's kind of come up over the last, I don't know, maybe last year or so. It's actually an area that was really core to how we were thinking about our implementation of RAG and using our knowledge graph. Microsoft just released a paper several months ago on it. But the concept is really, I mean, leveraging a knowledge graph as extra context for the generation side, which is really the prompt you provide to the LLM. And so it's let me contrast it more so where typically you're using a vector search to find bits of text that are relevant to the question or to the prompt. And GraphRag, you can augment that information you get back with the relationships of that text to the graph. And so like we were talking about in the extraction of if there's Microsoft and OpenAI and Seattle in the cited text, you can sort of expand your footprint of information. And this is where you kind of have to guide it a bit because it's like, you don't really know. I mean, you don't want to pull in everything, like all the last 10 years of Microsoft revenue or something like that. So you have to sort of guide the graph retrieval to say, okay, I'm asking a question. It seems financially related. Go import all the revenue of the last several years from the entities that we've identified in the query. And that's where you can then use the graph as a secondary search mechanism and retrieval mechanism. And that's really, it's still early days. I mean, there's been some prototypes out there, some papers, but I think it's still an evolving area.
What would be the differences between like a baseline traditional RAG system and the GraphRag? What is the improvement?
So GraphRag, I mean, the way we see it is with a typical RAG, you're starting with the text that you've ingested. So text from extracted from documents, transcripts from audio files, and you're chopping that up into chunks, and that's what's provided to the LLM. In contrast, GraphRag is, I mean, you can actually get data that wasn't in the text, the cited text. So it could be data that was extracted from other documents, like maybe it found the revenue of a company in a different document, or it pulled it from an API service somewhere else to enrich the knowledge graph. So it's really a way that it can see outside the domain of the cited sources and provide more context to answer the question. That's really how we see GraphRag.
What are the key components or modules within the GraphRag framework?
I mean, a lot of it is really ingestion. You have to create the knowledge graph, which is, the vast majority of the work is you have to do named entity extraction, or you have to use LLMs to do the identification of the entities or the nodes in the knowledge graph, and have a really rich kind of ETL pipeline for creating the knowledge graph. So I would say that's probably more than the majority of the work is just in having a pipeline that can deal with changes in data. Like you edit a document, you remove a reference to a company. How do you remove that from your knowledge graph? Those kind of things. And then the other side of it is really just during the retrieval stage of the RAG workflow, having a way that you know, okay, I'm not just going to look at the text in the cited text. I'm going to kind of widen my vision and start walking the graph to pull in extra data. Mm-hmm. The thing we've seen is, I mean, it's at least right now, it has to be guided. I haven't seen a way that you can make it dynamic and be like, hey, I'm going to use GraphRag if I see this scenario, and I'm going to use normal RAG if not, because there's extra work that has to be done during retrieval. And also you had to create the knowledge graph in the first place. But it is something we're looking at is, can we make it dynamic? It'll sort of pull from the graph as needed without being guided is something we're looking at.
How does GraphRag handle scalability or efficiency concerns with large scale graph data?
I think a lot is in the architecture. In ours, as I said, it's more of an index. So we're not storing the text, or we're not storing a lot of data in the graph database itself. So the graph queries end up being pretty fast. And then we're able to pull in the metadata from a faster storage layer. And so I think scalability, I mean, you're going to have millions or billions of entities. You need a graph database that can handle that. And I would say if not all of the existing graph database solutions can handle that scale. So that's typically not a problem. The queries are usually fast. They've been tuned enough. That's why I think a lot of the hard work, at least what we've seen, is on the creation side. Just making sure you can actually get the right data, keep it fresh, and that kind of thing.
You already talked a little bit about the differences between GraphRag and traditional RAG. Can you talk a little bit more about how GraphRag addresses the typical challenges related to building a graph representation or graph representation learning, like node embedding or graph classification.
What I would love to get to, and hopefully we'll get to soon, is the ability to, once you have the graph created, create embeddings of the relationships. And so you have a subgraph of information, say, by page. And so I've observed these companies, these people, these places, and their relationships on a page of text. And I think then be able to run sort of higher level algorithms like graph embeddings and say, hey, what is similar to this page of text with its graph relationships? Because today you can run just a vector embedding on the raw text. I think having a graph embedding that takes both of them, or like a multi-vector embedding, could be really interesting. And I think I could see that evolving over the next year or so as this becomes more commonplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds super interesting, yeah. What are some current limitations or potential drawbacks of GraphRec?
I would say, the biggest is just it does take more work. You could go back and backfill the graph from the text if you say you've ingested like 1,000 documents and you want to create the graph. That may be a little more trouble. We make you opt in. So you can set up a workflow and say, hey, I want to build an entity graph from this data. There's a little bit of extra cost. You're doing some analysis on that text, or you're running LLMs, you're using up tokens. And I would say that's probably the biggest limitation is just, managing cost and scale, because you may, if you have a ton of data, maybe you want to pick and choose the data that you want to create a knowledge graph from. But there's other solutions. If you're not assuming cloud hosted, like an OpenAI API or something like that, you can build, a lot of this more in your own data center with local models and things like that, and keep the cost down that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. We already talked about use cases of knowledge graphs before. Could you share some examples of real-world applications of GraphRec where it has been successfully used to tackle like a previous problem maybe?
Yeah, this is what I'll probably have to say. I don't know, because it's still more of an exploration phase right now. I think it's so new of what the capabilities are. We're actually looking for more of those use cases to understand how this applies. We've done our own prototyping and testing, but I think it's still early days, honestly, for this area. And I'm hoping over the next, 6 months, year, we'll start to get more in production GraphRec use cases that we can get some more feedback on. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense, yeah. What are the problems that the development community behind GraphRec is currently still working on?
Yeah, I think, the biggest thing I've seen is, there's not really any standardization on what GraphRec means. I think everybody has their own interpretation of it. There was a Microsoft paper that kind of put a sort of line in the sand about it. And a lot of what they described, we were already doing. We hadn't really talked about it in that way of putting a word to it. But I think we'll start to see a bit more coalescing. Some people don't agree with this, but I think RAG is standardized a lot. The pattern of RAG, per se, there's still knobs that you can turn, like do you use re-ranking or not, or those kind of things. But the concept of RAG, I think, is stabilized. We're not there yet with GraphRec. And so I think we'll really, kind of have to go through a wave of trying things, see what works, see what doesn't, before that kind of settles into a pattern.
Kirk, are there any other topics that you would like to talk more about?
The other area is just, exploring the diversity of knowledge in multimodal data. We've talked a lot about text and creating entities, but there's also a lot you can do with visual data. We're talking about Seattle, so seeing the space needle in a picture can create a node in a graph. And so I just want to make sure we don't get sort of locked into the text world, but this all really applies to multimodal data as well. Obviously, auto transcriptions, but there could be things that are found in a video, seen in a video or image that become nodes and available to GraphRec the same way as something in the spoken or written text.
So Kirk, knowledge graphs, a lot has been talked about how they can help reduce a great deal the problem of hallucinations with LLMs. Could you perhaps talk about that for a second?
Yeah, I think, the grounding concept of, providing sources for the LLM to pull from is really what, is at the heart of, I mean, creating an accurate RAG algorithm, RAG pattern. And I think the ability to have graphs and pull in more context feeds into, providing that extra accuracy. And it's something, it's speculative. And I think prototyped at this point, I wouldn't say it's we have great sort of numbers on exactly the difference between this. But what we've seen is you can sort of wind down your amount of hallucinations by proper grounding, by giving good content sources, even by some prompt engineering to really have the LLM focus on the content you're giving it, not what it's been trained on. And so we haven't struggled as much with the hallucination if you have good retrieval. And so I think the graph RAG really feeds into, okay, I'm providing it more context. It has more data to kind of chew on that isn't in its training set. And that should minimize the amount of hallucinations because you're giving it a wider set of context.
Looking to the future, what are the developments or advancements that you see coming with knowledge graphs or graph RAG that you're most excited about?
Yeah, I think, bringing it to market of graph RAG and kind of building knowledge graphs, we've really seen a swell of people, talking about it on Twitter, talking about it on Reddit, more papers coming out. So, you can kind of see the momentum around awareness and implementation. A lot of what's out there is still kind of in the demo phase. I think we've been really focused on the ingestion path and constructing the knowledge graph. And we'll be releasing something more formal from a graph RAG feature very shortly. But I think it's, what we're seeing in the market is, as people's awareness grows, we'll start to see more people talking about it and implementing it. But I think it brings up a whole other question of evals. How do you even evaluate that this is better? And that's an area that I think is some companies, they've been doing RAG evals. I don't know how well they'll apply to graph RAG evals and those kind of things. That could be kind of tricky, but that could open up a whole new market for products or companies to help with that area. So I think that's one area. Evals, I think, aren't going away. They're only going to become more important. And then I think really, getting into kind of the future of kind of where the RAG pattern can be useful, we really see two areas. And it's, repurposing your content that you've ingested is one of them. So using the retrieval part of this to find interesting information in a large data set might be good for marketing materials, might be good for technical reports. And so being able to say, give a rough outline of what you want to pull from or create like a blog post or report and use the graph to fill in the details. And that graph could be constructed from other structured data or unstructured data. And I think that becomes really interesting where we can use this pattern with a really rich data set to create, really high quality content. And then the other is really the sort of agent concept that's starting to be talked about. I think there's some open source projects that are working on this. There's also a lot of past work, around actor models and sort of distributed architectures and things like that, that I think we don't want to forget about. I think there's a lot of work that we can pull from. And I think that's a pattern that can apply where the RAG concept is really just a set of functionality that gets called from the agent and can sort of feed to the output of the agent into the input of another agent. But I don't know. From our perspective, we kind of see them as two different layers where the RAG is more analogous to like a database query, where there's some input, there's some output, and then you have a sort of programming system on top of it for asynchronous agents and those kind of things. So we'll see how it evolves. I think other people have different perspectives where maybe they're more integrated. I see it a little bit more as a kind of workflow layer, kind of a graph workflow. And then the RAG is just functionality that kind of fits in underneath it.
So perhaps, Kirk, you can tell us a little bit about Graphlet and your approach to simplifying this whole fascinating area and what the work that you're doing there.
For sure. No, it's really interesting. I've been looking into this kind of unstructured data platform space for several years after kind of having a personal interest in knowledge graphs and started to see how the kind of worlds collide you want to get the data ingested and extracted and prepared but then creating the knowledge graph kind of fits right into that. And so we've been working on this for a few years now, and now offer a platform for developers to build what we're calling vertical AI apps. So you bring, it's kind of bring your own data for a domain specific area like healthcare, fintech, advertising, marketing, really anything. And we handle the full end-to-end pipeline. So we're contrasting that against kind of a lot of open source projects there are today that are kind of DIY. Like you have to figure out, like, pick a vector database vendor or pick a PDF extraction vendor and cobble this together yourself, where we really are focused on simplicity for the developers, where it's one API call to put data into us, one API call to search or to have a conversation with the data. And then we also offer things like publishing, where use LLM prompts to repurpose a bunch of content. And it really fits nicely because we're all built on this kind of retrieval model from the data set that's generated from our ingest pipeline. So really, I think we're taking more of a content-first approach to say, let's just get the content into the system, indexed, stored, prepared in a way that we can use it. And then you can sort of pull from it via search or RAG or anything you want to do later. But we really make sure that it acts as a really simple programming model. We offer a direct API access, but also just ship a Python and a TypeScript SDK. So anybody building, I mean, like, we've just built a bunch of Streamlit sample apps. One of them that is really interesting, I thought, was extracting website topics. So it's using the entity extraction that we talked about, people, companies, topics, and then charting that. So it's using a lot of the same core pieces for more classic data visualization model. One of the things I just hadn't gotten to, but I got to do in the next couple of weeks is a graph representation and a graph viewer. So right now we can create the graph and then in the sample app show a way that you can walk the graph and kind of visualize the data you have. And I think that'll kind of connect the dots for people to see kind of, okay, here's the data that I've been extracting and the relationships, and how can I kind of see the relationships to other pieces of content. Right now we have the open source SDKs. We're free to use for up to a gigabyte of data that you can ingest and start playing with via our sample apps or starting to code against it. And then we're essentially usage-based. So we have a small platform fee that you can get started with, and then you just pay by how much data you put in and use. So really compared to what we've seen is, I mean, we're saving, I mean, even like the cost of a developer for some companies, where instead of having to build a whole pipeline and everything like this from scratch, you just get an API to use. And that's really our focus, is just to open this kind of technology and AI models and things like that up to another set of developers that maybe just wouldn't have the expertise to integrate into their applications.
And in terms of the open source work that's going on, is there anything there that you'd advise people to check?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of really good things from, there's a instructor library for data extraction, I think is really interesting in this space. There's a guy, Yohei, on Twitter that does a lot with knowledge graphs. He's been building a lot of different samples around kind of extracting information into graphs and visualizing them. He does a lot of great work. And then the last one I'll say is I've been following Crew AI, who's doing some AI agents and things like that, that I think is really getting some good interest, and I like where they're going. And there's always great projects coming up. Those are some of the ones I've been keeping my eye on.
Unfortunately, that concludes today's episode. Before we leave you, just wanted to quickly mention our magazine, The Data Scientist. You can subscribe for the magazine for free at datasciencetalent.co.uk/media. And we will be featuring this conversation in the September issue of the magazine, a transcribed and edited version. Kirk, thank you so much for joining us today. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for the opportunity. Really got into some great areas that we got to explore, and really was a great time being here.
And thank you also to my co-host, Philip Diesinger. And of course, to you for listening. Do check out our other episodes at datascienceconversations.com, and we look forward to having you with us on the next show.